for 2 days, we really lifted up at the Germanic American Institute on Summit Avenue. We held Deutsche Tage once again. This is our podcast, Here and There. I'm Michael, and I do have the pleasure of taking you through a little summary of Deutsche Tage. Of course, it does take quite a team to actually put on such an event. At first, I'm having a quick chat with Linda to actually tell us how many people were involved. How did it actually get to be Deutsche Tage? Because this is not just an overnight success.
The day couldn't be any better, weather-wise and people-wise. Our lawn is packed with individuals enjoying our music and our food and our drink and just having a great time together.
Sharing Gemütlichkeit.
How many people do we actually have behind the scenes who make all this possible?
Well, if we include all of our volunteers, we probably have close to 400, 500 people that pull this off. Seriously. Because there are multiple shifts every day of people that do things like wristband sales and beer sales. And
How much time to organize all this to just pull it off, which to me as almost bystander who appreciates and enjoys the crowd here, which seems to just be so effortless.
So it takes about a year to prepare for today. So 1 year of planning for 2 days of celebration.
And now looking ahead, we have the Oktoberfest coming up, which is one of the, if not the largest ethnic festival in Minnesota.
Yes, I would say, and we are also the most authentic St. Paul Oktoberfest in the Twin Cities, and we have close to 20,000 or more people attend that event.
And that's already in planning and going down. How many people are involved there?
Let's up that one to about 600-700 people that put that on.
Okay, so the question then is, of course, do we need anybody else? Do we need more volunteers? And if so, how do people get involved?
Yes, we can always have volunteers here and people also to just come and enjoy us. You can look at our website. We have Rachel Lipon, who is in charge of the volunteers. Her name and email is on our website. So you could look at that, click on it, and it'll take you to a site that talks about volunteering here with us at the Germanic American Institute.
What else do we need to know about today, about tomorrow, and next year in case that somebody misses this year?
Well, right now our highlight is goats. So we have some goats in a cage, which has been our highlight today.
Linda, thank you so much. Return you back to your duties, and I'm going to chase down the next voice.
Thank you so much. Have a great time.
And you'll hear about the goats here in a few minutes. But of course, also, I do want to make note of the fact that this event was recorded live, so you will find that some cuts in this edit are a little bit choppy, and perhaps the audio is not as clean as you have come accustomed to from our productions. Usually, this is just the nature of doing things live. I did, however, find actually the current president of the board of the GEI. And this once again gets to say that the GEI is not just what you see on the front end, but there are a lot of moving parts in the back end and a lot of hands that actually make the GEI what it is. And I had the pleasure to briefly talk with Nancy about her impressions of Deutsche Tage. What's your impression? This is not the first time you're at the event. This is not the first time you're witnessing the event. What is your impression? What do you think?
Well, I think every year the staff does just such a phenomenal job of trying to keep it fresh, bringing new things in. And, you know, I like to see all the new things as well, and it's sort of surprising. And everybody's in a great mood. The weather's cooperating. So yeah, that's my impression.
For the most part. Have you had a chance to talk to some people here who are in attendance, witnessing what's unfolding?
I've had so many people just say, oh my gosh, this has been my first time. Thank you, which I feel like saying, no. Thank you for coming. It is a fundraising event, so it's been wonderful. People are just charming.
It is one of the two events we put on per year. This one, Deutsche Tage, and then the Oktoberfest are two staple items that actually keep us alive in the broad sense of things. And Nancy, thank you so much for taking the time.
So, herzlichen Dank zurück.
And yes, the Oktoberfest is coming up. Actually, this September, there is a story as to why the Oktoberfest actually does take place in September. If you were to go through our podcast archives, we do have mention of that and how historically it came to actually be in September instead of October. But as you would imagine, that no fest, particularly no festivity of such stature, can exist without music. It's impossible. So I actually checked in with the DJ on staff, Doi. Standing at the DJ booth at the Deutsche Tage, Ondoy is our DJ. For one, thank you very much for entertaining us.
Thank you. Thank you very much.
Big question, how do you come up with the music selection?
I actually am going very simple. I'm using Spotify. Spotify has a wonderful polka playlist. It's German polkas. It has 7 hours of polka. It is such a wonderful mix. They're great songs. I mean, how could you go wrong, you know? It's easy to get to, and everyone has access to it, so.
Seven hours of German polka.
I mean, I knew it existed. I just didn't know it all existed digitally. Now we know.
You're way ahead of me because I had no idea that this existed
right,
at all.
Exactly.
Awesome. What is the expectation? Is this the first time you're actually doing this, or have you been here before?
Yep, this is the first time I'm running sound for the GAI. I've worked with them before in other projects. I helped. I actually met Linda through a sponsorship when I worked for a different company. That wasn't an audio company, and it just happened to be that I've started to get myself more and more involved. And just like everyone else who gets hooked on the German American Institute, you get involved. That's how it works.
You get involved, you get roped in, and suddenly we kind of make you part of the family.
Next thing you know, you're just a big part of the family. That's exactly it.
Thank you very much. It was great to meet you, sir.
Thank you very much.
That is kind of our MO. We rope you in and make you part of the family. But did you catch the thing that actually made us both pretty much chuckle almost wildly? 7 hours of German polka on Spotify. That is quite significant. So if you are a connoisseur of polka music, then please go ahead, hop on over to Spotify and fulfill your dreams with 7 hours of polka. To put on such an event, it does take a lot of support, and you've already heard from Linda that we had about 450 people who were involved, give or take, in actually making Deutsche Tage happen, but it goes far beyond that, and for this year we had two main sponsors, who helped us realize Deutsche Tage. For one, thank you to all these who's been new to our family, and then of course our long-standing tradition with Paulana. And Paulana is represented locally by Joe, and I had the opportunity to have a quick chat with Joe. Let's try this again. I had a quick opportunity for a chat with Joe. See, there it is. And the conversation was actually quite interesting, but listen for yourself. Inevitably, it does take a village to put on anything, such as the Deutsche Tage. It does take a village. It takes a ton of supporters. It takes a ton of attendance. And it takes two sponsors predominantly, one of which is Paulana. Paulana, made originally in Munich, also one of our greatest supporters at the Oktoberfest. And I have one of the Paulana greats right in front of me. And if I just may ask you to just introduce yourself real quick, how do you come to represent Paulana? What's Paulana's relation to us?
Well, hello, my name is Joe. I work with Paulana here in the United States and kind of travel all over the western part of the United States, spreading the great word of this German brewery called Paulana. Been partners with the Germanic American Institute since I started the company 8 years ago, and it's just been a great relationship for a long time. This is one of our favorite events of the year here at Deutsches Tage. And, you know, we just can't be more excited, especially with the day we're having today. It's just a beautiful day just to sit in like a kind of a pop-up beer garden that they put on here. And just what a true gift to all of us to enjoy a great German beer on this exciting day.
Yeah, 85 degrees on the thermometer. Nothing better to actually really enjoy a cold one, right?
Well, with no humidity in Minnesota. That's nice.
And Joe and I have a little bit of history. It dates back to last year's Oktoberfest. I understand that Joe is going to be at the Oktoberfest again.
I am, absolutely.
And we'll have Steinhaben again, right?
Yeah, absolutely.
In case you don't know what Steinhaben is the old tradition that we actually experience at almost all those events, where a couple of crazy people step up on stage and lift a stone. Now, it's not just an ordinary stone, it's a manufactured stone, right?
Absolutely. It's 515 pounds of concrete, and the object is to lift as high as you can. Now, we do it a little untraditionally, where there's not weight classes or nothing like that. It's an open competition, so the little guys take on the big guy. So it's about strength, and it's about true grit to lift up the stone as high as you can.
And it's a pretty heavy stone, I can attest for that. So we'll bring that back also for the Oktoberfest. Certainly, you will probably get to listen to this before the Oktoberfest. We invite you down, and if you feel strong.
Yep. As far as I'm aware, mm-hmm. for this traditional style, this is the only place in the United States that does that.
We are the only place that does it.
That I'm aware of, yes, because I've looked all over the country, and I cannot find this version of it anywhere.
So at which point I would have to say, if you're feeling strong and you're feeling, let's say, ambitious, perhaps.
We will give you liquid courage with some beer.
Come on by, join us for Steinhaven. And in case you should win the entire event, then you could proudly proclaim that you are the one who holds the record in the U.S. for Steinhaven. That's, I think, pretty enticing.
Mr. Steinhaven, USA.
Mr. Steinhaven, USA. Joe, thank you so much once again for supporting this event.
Anytime. And, thank you for having us. We're looking forward to this year and many to come.
Mr. Steinhaven, USA. So if you're listening to this and you're feeling strong and that you're out for an adventure, please, of course, join us at the upcoming Oktoberfest and just take part with the Steinhaven action. And also, we are trying to work with Joe for him to actually come on the podcast and give us a little more backstory on Paulaner. What does it actually take to brew a good beer, particularly in Minnesota, where the craft brewing tradition at this point is really strong? I think it does make sense to also look at the very strong and deeply rooted historic tradition of brewing beer German style. Also, if you have listened to some of our former episodes, we had one in particular where we had Gina, the executive director of the GAI, in our podcast studio, and we were talking about the dual education system. It was quite an interesting podcast. If you haven't listened to this one yet, I certainly invite you to do so. And what's particularly interesting in this podcast is the mention of the dual education system. The dual education system is something very German, but I am not the one to tell you about this. I actually connected with Joshua Seberg from the ICAT, which we've also mentioned on the podcast before, and he has all the details. Apprenticeship Pavilion is one of the staple locations here at the GAI Deutsche Tage, where it is about the dual education system. And I do have Joshua here, who represents the ICAT apprenticeship program. Actually, Joshua was here at the GAI about a month or two ago, giving a talk, a presentation. Welcome to Deutsche Tage.
Hi, thanks for having us out. So we're out here promoting the ICAT apprenticeship program, which is bringing the German apprenticeship model to the United States. We're working with community colleges and industry to introduce this model to help hire, train, and retain their future workforce, mainly in the field of manufacturing.
The employees that are harder and harder to come by because everybody rushes towards college.
That's right. I mean, right now there's a workforce crisis to begin with. Unemployment is at record low, and not many people have been training for higher skilled careers like these. So we're going back and looking for high school graduates who otherwise might consider going to a four-year college and racking up all this debt and getting into something that may not really be a good fit or have a great future for them. And we're helping industry steer these kids into these fields like CNC machining, industrial maintenance, and mechatronics, where there is definitely a future and a great career path.
So since you mentioned the term kids, what is the earliest age that you would think in the U.S. That it would make sense for a teenager, if you will, to embark in such a direction?
Right. You know, it's a good question. We're looking for high school graduates. So, yeah, when I say kids. So these are outgoing seniors. I mean, we talk to freshmen, juniors, and sophomores as well. But, you know, we're recruiting graduating seniors into the program who can dedicate their time to working at a company and going to school to train for the program. These are three-year programs, so that's mainly. But it's not exclusive to that age group. We have people of all ages up into their 40s going through the program right now.
Also an opportunity to just re-educate and relearn and then re-enter the workforce in a different manner.
Yeah, we definitely have career changers. We work with the Department of Labor, the local and state Department of Workforce Development here in Minnesota, the DLI, through their work centers who are, they're job centers, right? So there are people coming through looking for new opportunities like that. So, and the people who are a little older going through the program are typically coming through those channels.
Is there a distinct benefit other than, of course, finding an employee?
Right. Depending on the state, typically there are some kind of incentivization programs. Here in Minnesota, the DLI has a great program through the Pipeline program where they do offset some of the training costs for employers. But the spirit of the ICAP program is really to get companies thinking of growing their own workforce and training their own workforce, creating that sense of loyalty among their employees. employees, so they want to stay in the company and not just get trained and leave.
How many states in the U.S. are participating? Do you happen to know that?
So we are active in Illinois, Indiana, Michigan, Wisconsin, and Missouri, and Nebraska. We have other offices throughout the United States who are also doing the program, primarily in the South and Southeast as well. You know, like in Georgia, Tennessee, where the German auto manufacturers are, and their OEMs.
For American standards, or from an American perspective, perhaps, this is a little bit of a cultural shift. This is a different identity in terms of education. How has it been received so far?
That's a great question because, yeah, that is one of the kind of the uphill battles that we're facing is trying to, implement this mind shift in American companies, especially German companies. When we approach them, of course, get it. They understand, and it's just a matter of timing and costs and, you know, putting in the budget. American companies, we really have to sit down and explain what a German-style or European-style apprenticeship is, in some cases what an apprenticeship is and how it can work for their company. And then we, you know, part of what we do is really sitting down with the companies and guiding them through the process and getting them ready to train their employees. And, we have a train-the-trainer course where we put their lead mentors through it to gear up for it. And, we support them every step of the way. So to kind of ease that pain of getting into something completely foreign and new, that's what we're here to do.
If a company suddenly finds themselves interested and sees a reason in actually embarking on such a dual education project, how long does it take from having had the interest to actually implementing it?
Right. We've gotten companies and areas going in about 3 months, which is not ideal because essentially we need a college who is willing to partner with us and who can offer the theoretical classroom training. We need that critical mass of companies to come on board and commit to hiring. Ideally, we would like a year lead time so we can build up the candidate pool, get out to the high schools and talk to young people about the opportunity and properly train and onboard the company to do it. But I mean, it could really be anywhere from, you know, 3 to 9 months is a good lead time.
But still, from an organizational perspective, pretty quick, actually.
Yeah, right, exactly.
What have you seen so far? How has it taken hold and how successful has it been?
When we started this program in 2015, we had one partner college and a small handful of companies just to get this going. We've since grown to 15 partner community colleges throughout the Midwest and something like 70, 75 companies now.
What's the biggest rejection that you hear?
The biggest pushback from companies is we're so busy right now that we don't have the capacity. We don't have anyone to train. It's not even about the cost, even though that's maybe a second reason, because it is an investment for the companies to, put the kids through the training and cover their education expenses but typically it's really more about who's going to sit down with them and do the training. And we really try to emphasize this is what we do, is make it easy as possible for you to be prepared to be involved in the training so that the apprentices and the company, of course, get the most out of it.
Joshua, thank you so much. I think we do have to invite you when you're in town to an actual special episode and really crack down on what this means and how it could broadly be implemented in the U.S., which has such an incredible labor shortage on the trades side of things.
Well, it would be my pleasure to come out and talk to you guys in depth about it. And you're right. I mean, it's definitely a mind shift or a paradigm shift involved in trying to get people to think more along the lines of training their own employees and investing in their future workforce.
It was absolutely great to hear from Joshua again, particularly after his presentation that was very well received that he has given at the GEI. But also when you listened to Joshua's presentation, it was very much corporately focused, which makes absolute sense in the event of, or the acceptance, if you will, of dual education. But the question then, of course, is what happens to the individual, individual student, if you will, who has an interest in learning a trade, but is not quite sure what kind of trade and doesn't exactly know how to approach the idea after high school to go into a trade. And this is where the next guest comes in. I am talking with Kerry, who is from the Congress Bundestag, Nacelle Open Door, which is actually an office that is here in St. Paul that addresses exactly that question.
Well, today we also have, representing apprenticeships, we have the Congress Bundestag Youth Exchange Vocational Program, one of the three components of the Congress Bundestag program. Congress Bundestag is a large program. It's 250 students. It's funded by the U.S. Congress and the German Bundestag. But one of the programs is for graduating high school students. They can go to Germany for the year. They don't need to know German already. They learn German for 2 months or perfect their German, live with a host family, go to high school for a little while, but then the majority of their time is spent working in an internship or apprenticeship setting, something that really wouldn't be possible for them to do here because of the difference in the education style. In Germany, they're able to get training and hands-on experience in that practical setting, and it really helps students to understand and confirm what they might want to do when they then return to the United States.
So under normal circumstances, an apprenticeship program in Germany and Austria takes about, give or take, 3 years. Is this a compressed version, or is it sort of an introductory, tip your toes into the water and see whether this is something you actually want to continue once you return to the U.S.?
That's exactly it, the latter. So they just get to try it on. They dip their toes and see, do I really want to be a doctor or a paramedic or a forester or a baker or a carpenter? They can really try that on. They might even try different things. It also exposes them to the German way of doing it. For example, someone who thinks that they want to be a teacher, they can work in a German kindergarten or in a German Realschule or a German Grundschule and get an idea of what that education system is like. We have many students who they maybe decide when they come back they want to pursue something different, or that experience in Germany has really solidified their experience.
The idea would be to test something that you would otherwise not be able to test in the U.S. simply because the facilities and the functionality is not set up as such. But you get to do something without losing time in your high school journey. So you still progress in high school while doing something that could eventually influence your career choice after having graduated, not being necessarily faced with the college debts that everybody almost is faced in this country, but having already made an informed decision whether this is something you want to do or if a trade is something that truly fits you. Did I get this somewhat right?
Yeah, somewhat. The unique part about this scholarship is that it's after high school. So you absolutely will lose no time in high school. It's only for graduating high school seniors. So it's a gap year program before they start college. But it absolutely then can solidify, maybe they do have plans to go to college, maybe not, but this is a way to solidify those plans. Some students, it confirms what they want to do, and they come home and go on to college, or they go into a study program, or they change their course.
How does somebody get to join this program?
Yeah, it's open to students across the whole United States. Basically, the qualifications are to have graduated from high school and to have a decent GPA, but doesn't have to be stellar. They don't have to already know German. They need to be recommended by someone at their high school, fill out an application, go through an interview process. All this occurs in about January, and then students are chosen around March, April, and then they go in July to spend a year in Germany.
How competitive is it to get one of the spots?
It's actually, students have really good odds. We get about 100 applications across the whole country for 25 spots. It's a well-kept secret.
So 25 spots, 100 applications, so 1 in 4 basically gets the nod. So this could use a little more competitiveness. How do we get there to essentially attract a little more applications? What is the game plan?
One of the biggest hurdles ties right back into our apprenticeship idea, and that is a lot of students don't understand the value in taking a gap year. They think that they need to go right on to university and get started, that they will lose time if they don't. And we found that this is a wonderful way for students to really take time, explore. They come away with so many more skills, and if they do decide to go on to college when they come back, they do so in a way that is much more driven, much more focused. They have so much to offer their university, and the skills that they bring when they come back are countless, not to mention the connections and relationships that they formed in Germany and their language skills.
What's the associated cost?
The scholarship pays for their program time there, provides them with a host family and all of their basic expenses as a program, but we do ask students to bring about $5,000 in personal spending money, and that just helps them to have a comfortable stay while they're there.
Does this exclude some demographics in terms of income ability, or are there sponsorships available through perhaps German companies or sponsorship partners that could offset the cost for families who already have essentially a tough time to make ends meet?
Thank you for asking about that. We're actually, this year, we're looking at some additional funding that's available for students, that if the only reason that they might not be able to participate is because of that spending money piece, there is some funding that's available for financial aid, and we're really happy to be able to offer that. We've had some students in the past where they would be great candidates, but they really just weren't in a position to pull together even that $5,000, but we're able now to help offset that a little bit. So any student who's interested should absolutely apply and see where it could go.
But the biggest question is, how do I apply? Where do I find you? How do I even get to know about this and then put my hat in the ring, or essentially enter my name into the drawing?
Great question. So there's a few different ways to find this. One is to look for Congress Bundestag Scholarship, and you'll see some options. The other is to look at NACEL Open Door, and that's NACELOPENDOOR.org, NACELOPENDOOR.org. The Congress Bundestag Vocational Scholarship is on our website, and all of the information about it, as well as the application materials, which will be available then for this fall's applicant cycle.
And I'll make every effort to include that link in the show notes, so certainly just scroll on down in your preferred browser and click that link so we can get you and your son and or daughter to the right address and to the future opportunity to just spend a year in Germany and really get to know what it's like to be, for one, over there. But I think the unmentioned, truly powerful ingredient underneath the hood is the cultural bridge that's being built that I think would never really close. Even though you've left and come back to the U.S., there's still some availability for you at all points in time.
It's absolutely true. It's been over 25 years since I spent a year in Germany, and it's still something that I consider one of the best years of my life. It changed me as a person. Germany will always be a very special part of my heart, and so it's really exciting to be able to send young people off and have them have that experience and know that we really are working to build and grow this relationship that we've enjoyed for so long with Germany.
It's a phenomenal opportunity. Not to at least try, I think, would be a fundamental mistake. And just take that year. It's nothing lost. I mean, college is, and that's the interesting thing, college is always there for you. It will always wait.
And additionally, we find that students now will then understand the opportunities that are available them, available to them, not just here in the States, but also in Germany. And with language proficiency, now there's a whole other university system available to them.
And there's a lot to be said about that. Actually, some of my students decided to spend a year, and one of them actually 2 years in grad school, in Germany, and the acceptance rate is actually quite high because most Americans don't know that this is an option. This was incredibly informational. Carrie, thank you so much.
Danke schön. Gern.
And that was Carrie from Congress Bundestag. Once again, you can just Google Congress Bundestag or just go to nacelopendoor.org. That's NACELOPENDOOR.org. And I also did find a phone number. It's 1-800-622-3553. If you have questions, I think that this would be an interesting opportunity to explore trades and also spend a year abroad between high school and college, if this is something that your son or daughter is entertaining. In the beginning of this podcast, you've heard Linda talk about the big star of the show, of this year's Deutsche Tage. And the stars were actually four-legged. It was goats. And we did have two goat representatives at Deutsche Tage. And here is more about them. Anna, good to meet you. Thanks for being here.
No, thank you.
Goats.
Yeah.
Fill me in. What is the deal? So unexpected to see. Kids obviously are all over them.
Right.
And you have more than two, I'm assuming.
Oh, assuming. We have up to 450 goats total.
450 goats.
Yeah, we have multiple herds in different locations.
Are you mowing lawns?
Yeah, they eat the bushes, the buckthorn and stuff like that that's invasive to forest and brush areas. So they they call our goat dispatch. Depends on the size of the acreage that needs to be taken care of. That's how many goats we'll bring, and they'll be there for a week or two, maybe more if they're needed. And then once they're done, they get taken out.
Well, that's interesting. I just saw a couple of people coming in, and the kids immediately is like, "Where are the goats? Where are the goats? Where are the goats?"
Yeah.
So you must have really been one of the main attractions here.
That's good. I'm glad that's happening. I mean, if I can promote the business plus promote the pleasure of the goats, I'm all for it.
How did you actually arrive at this kind of, well, call it business model, if that is true?
So it started with getting tired of fighting the buckthorn. So the owner and I he has a biology major. He was working down in Los Angeles and saw them working in the parks there. So he's like, huh. So I've been raising goats since I was 10. So he took some of mine to his woods. I put some of them into my woods and saw the result. Well, needless to say, 10 goats grew to 100, grew to 300, grew to 400, and now it's almost a sick addiction. So it's a bio-friendly way, and whatever we can do to not put my stamp on something, I mean, I'd much rather do that instead of machinery and poison.
Is it something where there are city limits perhaps preventing you from coming into, let's say, right on Summit Avenue and get the GI lawn goated up?
Yep. There we've had some battles with permits and ordinances. County parks and city parks have been pretty easy, but some of our residential have been some battles to get into. So we try to go and look at the ordinance of the town you're in to see what we can do, and then to see if we can get like a, not a lien, but a, like a, okay, you can have them in here for this long as they're gone and they're not here forever.
How do you actually drop the goats off and make sure that they stay on the field that they're supposed to clean up?
Luck. we train them for their fences. So before they're put on a job, we make sure they're at our farms working with the electric fences. Now that doesn't prevent trees from falling on them. It does on the fences. Sorry, not the goats. Trees on the fences. You know, a power outage, like a bad circuit, something tripping. So we have goat watchers. So we hire part-time people who are either the landowner that we're at or somebody near a project, and we'll say, okay, you're on call in case we have an escapee. And we have had goats get out. We've had goats in suburban Burnsville. I mean, it's happened, but we haven't had any major catastrophes yet.
What's the wildest goat story that you have?
We've got some climbers that have climbed out of up a tree and then out the fence. So they've climbed the trees. Our first year at downtown St. Paul, we had goats stolen. A couple of gentlemen used extension cords for leashes and grabbed the goats, and they were found by the authorities. So,
well, that's interesting. Perhaps there's a black goat market.
Yeah, black goat market. There you go. Yeah.
For those who are interested, besides where they can find you, what would you say that the average cost of actually having the goats do the job?
It's such a hard question because it's all dependent on size, amount of goats. I've been trying to figure out a good answer because that's the number one question I've gotten. And it's you know, 10 acres, probably a week to 2 weeks with 100 goats, you know, could run you $500 to $1,200.
And they would have to come back once a quarter, once a month. I mean, of course, depending on the condition of the,
yep,
of the property.
We found that it's been 3 grazings for buckthorn. So it's 3 seasons, so 3 summers. We found the most effectiveness.
Okay, but that's still actually in the context of the bigger scheme, so to speak, pretty affordable.
I was talking to a guy today who was contracted through a tree clearing business, and for him to bring in all the heavy machinery, all the human workforce, is about $15,000. We'd be less than half of that.
So not just ecologically sensitive, but also affordable.
Yeah, I think it's good. I mean, we benefit. We feed our goats all year. You benefit while knocking off the invasive species. So I don't see any losing situation here. I think it's all a win-win.
Yeah, sounds definitely so. For those who are interested, where can they find you?
We're goatdispatch.com. We're based out of Faribault. Just go to the website and click on more information or whatever you want.
Thanks for taking time.
Yeah, no problem.
And that was really the most unexpected event partner, if you will, because the children, of course, were immediately running over to the goats. It was almost like a little petting zoo. Certainly a welcome addition to the Deutsche Tage. We have two more of our participants slash vendors to go, one of which is Dampfwerk and the other one US Solar. Dampfwerk, I've actually seen right behind the GAI podcast tent. Dampfwerk Distilling. Welcome to GAI.
It is awesome to be here.
What am I looking at? I mean, from the distance, it looks fantastic. It looks spirited, let's put it that way.
Yeah. So we specialize in recreating some old school German style spirits, specifically brandies and herbal liqueurs. So, you know, using very classical production techniques and, you know, starting with the whole fruit, you know, nurturing it throughout the whole process and not adding any enzymes, sugars, flavors, anything like that.
So what we could almost refer to as organic spirits?
Pretty much, yeah. Very clean, natural, brandies. And the herbal liqueurs, we actually source most of our recipes from a really old recipe book that's about 150, 200 years old from Germany. And we adapt the recipes, kind of modernize them a little bit, and kind of put an American twist on them.
I guess one of the biggest questions is always, how long does it take to go from fruit to actually consumable liquid?
For the fruit brandies, best case scenario, kind of 6 months. So if it's an unaged fruit brandy, if you are going to barrel it, that's, you know, adding another 2 years to, you know, up to 20.
I suppose in the U.S. we have, I guess, common knowledge, if you will, how bourbon and Kentucky whiskey and so forth are being made. Does the process differ in any which way?
Yes. So with the whiskeys, you're generally mashing and making a beer and then distilling it into whiskey. With the fruit, you know, the sugar is ready to eat by the yeast. Mm-hmm. So we just crush the fruit and add the yeast and ferment and distill. So it's almost a little bit simpler, you know, on a surface level.
What is it? Taste like? I'm going to have to ask, even though I can't drink it since I'm holding the microphone, but in terms of bouquet, is it this totally flowery bouquet that hits you hard afterwards in terms of alcohol content, or is it just a smooth ride, so to speak?
It's pretty smooth. So our brandies are kind of around 40%, but especially the pear brandy, it's like biting into a fresh pear. It's very fleshy. It's very bright and delicate.
Where can we find you if you're not here at the GI?
We are in 140 different accounts in the metro area. If you visit our website, www.dampfwerk.com, we have a map listing all of our accounts, and so you can, you know, very easily find stores that are close to you.
Oh, awesome. Good to have you here, and thanks for keeping us happy.
Wonderful. Thank you.
Now, there are two things to be said to that. For one, the term accounts seems to be, let's say, subject-specific lingo. It just really means that they are available at 140 different locations, and I did have afterward a small little sample of the pear liqueur, and I have to attest to the fact it was really very fruity, almost like biting into the real thing. Last but not least, US Solar, and you have heard of US Solar also in one of our previous podcasts. Claudia, for instance, is a beneficiary, if you will, of solar on her roof, on her property. And I have seen solar all around the place, actually, in St. Paul, slowly but surely making its way into the Summit Avenue area. And I had the pleasure to connect with US Solar and really find out what it's all about. And this is really a very, very interesting proposition.
And as I'm making my way around the Deutsche Tage, I'm checking in with US Solar, another one of the vendors we haven't had a chance to talk to yet. And I'm standing right next to one of the representatives of US Solar. And your name is?
Dana.
Dana, what am I looking at? What's the idea behind US Solar? We introduced you briefly in one of the previous podcasts of the GI, but having you as the source, I think it'd be much more interesting to hear from you. What is US Solar about and what's in it for the people who stop by?
Great, thanks for coming over and talking to us. We are building solar gardens, so they're large solar projects where people have the opportunity to subscribe to solar instead of putting it on their own house. So now you don't have to pay any investment, there's no upfront cost,
Nothing connects to your house, but you can still support solar and save money on your electric bills. So we offer a 20% savings the first year. So average person saves about $300 on their electric costs. It just depends, you know, how much energy you're using. We look at your electric report, tell you how big of a subscription you'll need, and then we'll let you know how much you're estimated to save based on that. We work just with Xcel Energy's program, so we're separate from them, but we build our projects and connect to their grid. As the energy is produced, you would get bill credits from Xcel. That's how they're paying for that energy. So you, the customer, get those, reduce your bill with Xcel, and then you have a subscription payment to US Solar. And the difference between those credits that you get versus the payment to us is how you save your money. So that's where that $300 comes in. We expect you'll get $300 more in credits than what you pay us, so you're saving about 20%.
It's interesting. We were around Hudson yesterday, just driving along the St. Croix, and on the way back actually into town, I noticed off to my left-hand side what I would have expected to be a regular field, and it looked very suspicious, like solar panels across the entire field. Is this sort of the type of installation that you're referring to?
Yes, exactly. Most of our projects are about 8 to 10 acres, and they're in a lot of farm fields, so you can see them when you're driving through more rural areas.
So if somebody were to come to the conclusion that this is not just worthy of course, to support the environment, but also a good cost-saving measure to reduce the energy bill while investing, is there sort of a measurable return of investment that breaks down in terms of ROI over the course of time, and what does it look like?
Yeah, great question. So there is an ROI because there's not an investment. You're getting it the very first month. You're saving right away without first putting money in. So you don't have to wait a number of years or to get like a percentage like that. It's just instant. Right when the solar garden comes online, you'll start getting those credits and paying us, and so you'll get savings the very first month.
Got it. So how does somebody actually get involved? And I think the bigger question then would also be, do you have to have a house? Is it okay if you just have an apartment, condo? What are the stipulations to actually become part of US Solar?
Great question. So to be eligible, you have to have an Xcel electric bill. And then we just have to have a project that has space available still in your area. So to be eligible, you need to be in the same county or a neighboring county as the solar garden. So here in Ramsey County in St. Paul, we're building one over in Washington County, so people there can participate. You can be in an apartment, you can have a condo, you know, you don't have to own the roof over your head, or if you just don't want to put solar up, this is a good opportunity for you to join. And then to actually sign up, we just need your information, so your contact information and Xcel account information. We take a look at your electric report to know how big of a subscription you'll need, send you a proposal, and if you like what you see, you can sign on the dotted line and be part of the solar garden.
So this is kind of what we call no strings attached.
Yeah, I mean, you do sign an agreement, so we have a subscription agreement, but you're not liable for anything, you don't own it. You know, say a tornado runs through here in Minnesota, we take care of that. We're going to be, you know, rebuilding it, and we have insurance and maintenance for that.
So really, it's a no-risk proposal that really has only three winners. US Solar, of course, you the participant, and then nature itself. Is there a downside at all, if any?
Great question. Some people don't like doing things online. Our system is online, so we do our payments online and you sign up online. The bill credit component is tied into Xcel's rates. So we have a 20% savings in year one, but we can't guarantee 20% for the whole time because it'll follow what Xcel does. But Xcel's been pretty consistent in terms of raising their rates, about 2.5% every year for the last 25 years. So on average, that's how we estimate your longer term savings. So it's not guaranteed, but we make it as reliable as possible. And starting you off with that 20% savings gives you a really good, you know, buffer if there are some years Xcel doesn't increase.
Sounds great to me. And by the way, the booth, when you're looking at it, it looks beautifully orange, as you would expect it to be. And for anyone who now, of course, finds themselves with a piqued interest, it's us-solar.com. Once again, that's us-solar.com. Thanks so much for hanging out at Deutsche Tage. I hope we see you again next year and eventually at Oktoberfest too.
Yeah, absolutely. Thanks so much. Thanks for being here.
And what an event it was. Unfortunately, I didn't get to talk to everyone. There were lines at the food vendors and they were just so busy that I didn't have a chance to really connect with them and speak with them about their menus. But that's okay. You will find many of them actually once again showing up at the Oktoberfest at the Schmidt Brewery, which is our next big event. That was our short summary of 2 days of Deutsche Tage. If you missed it this year, then we certainly invite you for the 2020 edition. Other than that, this is Michael signing off. Thank you so much for joining us for this episode, and we are looking forward to welcoming you back at the next episodes.